On this episode of Roland Chidiac Connects, I get to chat with John Spencer. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I've been wanting to sit down and chat with you for a while. Before you had written your book, you and I had gone back and forth a little bit on Twitter just about certain things. And when your book came out, I was very interested. So I thought it'd be kind of cool if we could chat about it at some point. But before we get into all that, would you mind telling us the work that you're into right now?
All right. Well, right now I am a professor at George Fox University in Oregon. I kind of work in two different areas. One is on the educational technology side, which is really fun. I get to do a lot of professional development, a lot of teaching, you know, ed tech classes. I'm the director of their ed tech program. And then the other one is I get to work with, you know, people who are about to become teachers. And so I get to do, you know, pedagogy classes and, you know, teach them about the art and science of teaching. And so that's kind of what I do at the university. And then outside of that, you know, I blog, I make videos, I write books, and I'm really into creativity, design thinking, student engagements. Those are the kind of the big topics I'm into.
Nice. So tell us, how did you get into the whole professor business?
that was really on accident, but it goes to show you something about the connected world, right? What happened was I used to do these visual writing prompts with like a photograph, Creative Commons or public domain photograph with the image, you know, as the background, and then some kind of question or statement or whatever to draw students into writing. So I was really interested in, you know, how do you engage reluctant writers? And I ran into this other guy, Luke Neff, who did the same thing. And we were both doing this at the same time. And he had a really cool Tumblr site that he ran for this. And, you know, a couple times we would go back and forth. We'd collaborate. We'd do stuff together. We met up twice at a conference in Portland. And then, you know, we just kind of became friends online, which is the weird thing of, you know, the connected education crowd, right? You end up becoming actual friends with these people. And we weren't close friends necessarily, but then, you know, this job came up at a university where Luke lives, and he says, "Hey, John, I think you'd be a really good choice for this position." So I applied for it. I didn't think I would get it because I didn't have a doctorate. You know, other people applying had a doctorate already, and I didn't think I was qualified, but I thought, hey, this will be a fun experience to, you know, go ahead and apply and just see what happens. And then I went through the process, and I was, you know, narrowed down to the top two candidates, and had to teach in front of a class and teach in front of professors and all this kind of stuff. And I was still shocked when they offered me the job, but it was really pretty serendipitous, actually.
That's a cool story. And I really, a few things you said there, I wrote down here, the point about finding ways to engage reluctant writers. I know that I teach grade 4 and 5, and before that I taught grade 2, mm-hmm. and I've always ever had a class full of reluctant writers, and it's like the constant battle to find what gets these kids going and what gets them writing without thinking that they're actually writing. So I may need to pick your brain at some point about that. And the other thing that really kind of caught my attention, all of it did, but the fact that, you know, talking about connecting with people online and then actually becoming friends with them. I don't know about you, but I think that when I first started the whole online thing, it was really weird to like get into real conversations with people you've never met before. And then all of a sudden, you know, you connect just like you would face to face. So I think, you know, these days that whole notion is changing. Like, I think it's okay now. It's seen as normal to connect with people online and then to become quote unquote friends. So it's kind of really neat, your story and how you and how you kind of got into this work. The other thing is the power of applying to things that, you know, you think you may not have a chance with, but then all of a sudden things just go your way and you're doing something that you thought maybe, you know, I'll do it because I'm interested, but I don't really think I'm, you know, I've got the capacity or the credentials to get there. And then all of a sudden you're in it. So I didn't know that about you. So it's really neat that you were able to share that with all of us.
Thanks. And you know, there's a great TED Talk that influenced me a lot. It's by Amanda Palmer and it's called The Power of Asking. And that stuck with me, just this idea of, you know, how often we choose not to ask or not to apply or not to, you know, take that creative risk or whatever, because we don't want to look weak or we don't want to look like we failed or we don't want to whatever. And then we you know, sell ourselves short all the time, you know?
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. I'm experiencing that right now with the whole podcast thing and asking people if they want to sit down and chat with me. It was very difficult at first, but now it's kind of like what you're talking about. It's, and I need to see that TED Talk. I really want to, I've written it down. It's on my list of things to watch. You're right. I spend my days trying to teach kids to take risks and, you know, telling them that there's a lot of power in trying. And then, so it's like, well, why don't I do that myself? Right. I need to take my own advice. So thank you for that message. Before you were a professor, were you a classroom teacher?
Yeah, so I did that for 12 years. I started out in social studies. I always taught middle school. So I started in social studies, moved into self-contained, so teaching all subjects. And then I, the last 2 or 3 years, I taught journalism and computers. So the journalism class was kind of digital journalism, photojournalism. It was a little bit of blogging, a little bit of documentaries, podcasts, that kind of stuff. And then the other one was more computers, coding, a little bit of multimedia design. And those were kind of the two areas that I ended with.
Okay, very neat. So now I'm starting to get a picture of, you know, kind of where you came from and where you are right now. I was reading your website, which is very entertaining. I love your videos, by the way. So I've seen a lot of them, very creative. I love the cartoon look to it, right? The animation. It catches me and sucks me in every time. But I was reading on your website, and I would love to hear more about the idea where you talk about that you want to make something every day, and some days you make things, some days you make a difference, but on really good days you make both. I'd love to hear kind of where that idea, where that philosophy came from.
You know, I think I have always been into doing creative work. I mean, I when I was a kid, I loved to, you know, build forts and build stuff, you know, ramps. And I would draw and then try to build model baseball stadiums that I had invented. I was really into like old classic baseball stadiums. And this was back in the day when like the current baseball stadiums were really ugly. I mean, they all looked the same. They were all circles and so I always loved that. And then I love to, you know, draw and to paint, to write stories. So it's always been true of me ever since I was a kid. And then, you know, something happened when I was in college where I got really into, you know, doing, I was working for an urban nonprofit and I was in that side of kind of being really focused on making a difference that I kind of let the creative work slip. And then as I shifted into being a teacher, I realized that I needed a balance. I needed both. I needed to do things that, created that sense of meaning and fulfillment and making a difference. And then I needed to also, you know, do creative work. I needed to write stories and make videos and, do coding projects and all kinds of stuff like that. And so I think I've kind of landed on that place where I say, you know, I'm going to do something creative. What I make might be, you know, I'm making a difference. I'm making, you know, lesson plans and unit plans and helping develop future educators. Or it might be I'm writing a story. And like I said, I mean, on a good day, I feel like I get to do both. And I see like an intersection between those.
Okay, very good. So do you find, I call the creative things that I do in my life personal projects. Mm. Do you have a bunch of them going on all the time?
Yeah, I usually do. You know, and I kind of like to stagger them so that I have, you know, I usually have a couple of projects that are kind of in incubation where I'm thinking about them, but I'm not even planning them. Then I usually have one that I'm kind of planning, and then I usually have one that I'm really focused on doing, and then I'll usually have one that I'm revising. So, and they're not always massive projects. So like, yeah, this month, for example, I love this question, by the way, nobody's ever asked me this. So, you know, September, for example, I'm planning a book. I'm long-term planning. I'm thinking about it. I'm revising another book. I put together and release and am releasing a sketchy video and a free ebook that are both on student choice. So those are all kind of part of my creative work. And then I'm doing kind of a little entrepreneurial thing with somebody, AJ Giuliani. He and I wrote the book launch together. So we're doing kind of a little entrepreneurial thing and I'm seeing how that's working. And so I've got multiple projects going. And some of them never get released. So, you know, the other pieces, like I said, I'll usually be planning, revising, incubating, releasing all in the same month, you know, multiple ones, but never too many in one category, if that makes sense. And so, you know, one project that I'm working on right now that is probably never going to be released is a graphic novel for my kids. About a superhero taco, which is really fun. But yeah, so there's always some kind of project going on, and there's multiple layers of projects. And I don't know if that makes any sense what I'm describing. It sounds like a mess, but I feel like I stagger it, so it's not that much of a mess.
Yeah, when you explain it, doesn't sound like a mess to me. In fact, it's intriguing to me. My next, like, so as you're talking, I'm thinking about it, and It sounds like an organized chaos. Like, you know exactly what you're doing. It's like a messy desk. There's stuff everywhere, but you know exactly where everything is, and you know what you're working on now, what you might be working on later. But I want to know of the different parts of your process: incubating, considering, working on, publishing. Which do you have a favorite of those?
Yeah, I think I love the planning phase of work, when you have let an idea incubate for a while and you're really developing a plan. And then I love the revision side, not the fine tune. So, you know, like editing, like revising a book, for example, is fun. You've got your rough draft done and now you're making it good. The copy editing, not so much. That's not fun. Same thing with a video. You know, sketching out the video, and putting them into the movie and making and watching the animation actually happen and switching things around and stuff. That's fun. But you know, doing the absolute last minute fine tuning has never been fun for me. And I think the hardest part is the grind, right? The first draft of anything. So if it's a video, if it's a website, if it's a whatever, that first draft side is kind of my least favorite, but the revision and then the planning are kind of my favorite.
That's cool. I really like the incubation stage. I like, because for me, it's like a dream state. It's like you just sit back and you just let your mind go. And some of the ideas that come out of that are just so incredible. And then it's a matter of, you know, where do I want to put my time? How do I want to do this? And I get what you're saying. The grind is nasty. Like that first that first draft is, you know, you think you're working so hard to hammer out something good. And then when you need to revise it, it's torn apart. So there's a lot of excitement there. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of hustle. Like,
yeah,
you can't just, this stuff just doesn't happen on its own. There's got to be a lot of work.
Do you have a hardest point? So, I mean, if the incubation piece is fun for you, do you have a part where you're like, I just hate doing that side?
Yeah. You know, for me, the hard part is probably the hard part, but the most rewarding is what the quote unquote work, like the ins and outs of it. So like for the podcast, I love engaging with people and presenting to them why I'd like to speak to them. I love it. It's hard to hear people say no, but I totally understand and respect that. But just engaging with people, the back and forth before we even talk for the podcast is, I love it. The hard part is, for me, is the middle. So doing the podcast is awesome. So like talking to you right now is, I'm pumped. I get to talk to you and you're giving us all kinds of amazing stuff here. But we're talking, and when we're done talking, I need to play around with the audio. I need to listen to it again, reflect on it, edit, take notes. Like that part for me is the hardest, but I recognize that without that part, I don't get to publish it. I don't get to put it out there for people. And the purpose of this, one of the purposes is to get it out there, to create content for people to take and to use however they like. So for me, it's the what I would call the middle, because at the beginning, that's incubation, it's engaging. At the end, it's, you know, I'm proud of the product, whether, you know, people think it's good or not. I'm proud that I got through the process. But the middle kills me because it's the grind for me. Yeah. It's the, I have to find the time. And I know you've got children, I've got children, full-time job, you know, fatherly duties, husband duties, like there's things to be done, right?
Yeah.
And this is my personal project, so I make time for it. But thanks for asking that question, because even though I'm asking you the questions, I never thought of it that way. I just know that anything I've ever done that was worth doing involved a lot of hustle and a lot of grind.
Yeah, definitely.
So that brings me then to the next portion that I'd like to really talk to you about is the book that you wrote with AJ Giuliani. I have it sitting in front of me, and I have to confess, I don't know how many, I don't think I've confessed this on the podcast, but people who are close to me know that I'm not a big reader of books. And it's an oxymoron, because I'm a teacher and I'm constantly gathering information and reading different texts to improve my craft. But books are really hard for me. They've always been. But I've got your book, and I've been pumped to read it in its entirety for quite some time now. Because last year, my students and I were working on a project involving design thinking and three-dimensional technology. And I discovered Launch, and I thought, this could really help me. Now, so I didn't have it then when I was in the middle of the project, but it was always kind of in the back of my mind, kind of creeping Twitter to see what people are saying about it, watching, you've got a quick short video about Launch. And so I was able to suck away some information from that and use it to my benefit and my students' benefit. But I've got this book and I'm pumped. Like I'm looking forward to reading it. But before I let you talk about it, I was flipping through it the other day. I was flipping through the front. I always like to read the praise for people's books. Mm-hmm. You've got an all-star cast of people who have spoken highly about your book with AJ Giuliani. For example, Sarah Thomas, who was on my podcast, great, great person, such an amazing sharing person. Vicky Davis, Shelley Sanchez, Terrell, but I have to say that the one that caught my eye was Royan Lee, teacher and blogger, because my man Royan is not too far away from where I'm located. And I've had the pleasure of meeting Royan and chatting baseball with him. So, like, you know, now if I thought I was hooked before, I'm really hooked now. Tell us about this book. Tell us about the adventure of coming up with this idea, going through the middle, the grind part, and then seeing this great work get published for other people to benefit from.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll just say I'm a big fan of Roy, and having him like the book was really cool. He's somebody that I got to know a long time ago. I feel like he and I have both been blogging for a long time, and you know, I feel like we introduced different ideas to each other. He was the one who kind of got me into sketchnoting, actually, which was kind of a random thing. But I loved the way he did sketchnoting with his class, which was really cool. So the book, though, you know, it began with design thinking. We had both, AJ and I had both been into design thinking. We'd both had our strengths and weaknesses as teachers. And when I was in my last year of teaching middle school, he and I kind of hashed out some ideas on design thinking and helped work. We worked together to develop the launch cycle, which I used with my students. And there were some pieces that we both added to it. So I added a lot of design thinking doesn't have kind of an inquiry and research phase. And those were really important to me. So I kind of put those into the launch cycle. And then, you know, AJ, it was his idea to say, you know, we really need this phase where they send it to an authentic audience. It's kind of implied in design thinking, but it needs to be an explicit phase. And he really got me into thinking about, you know, how students are intentional about reaching their audience rather than just kind of making something. And these were things we were both into, but we had never articulated this in terms of a cycle. So we built the framework together. We didn't call it launch initially. That came later. And the funny thing is we kind of used design thinking to write the book. So after using, you know, developing the launch cycle, we kind of cycled back to that, tested it with my classroom and modified and tested and modified. And we were using design thinking to improve the design thinking framework that we had created together. And then we actually started our book with a bunch of interviews. We really began with this awareness phase of interviewing teachers and asking, you know, what are your pain points on design thinking? What are the things that you have a hard time with? Is it, you know, how do I fit into the standards, or I don't have enough time, or I don't have materials, or, and we really started there. And then we moved into doing a lot of research, interviewing a bunch of people, coming up with stuff, and then ideation, where we planned the book out together, and you know, all the way up through, you know, writing it and revising it and improving it and then, you know, launching it. And so it's kind of fun that we used the framework that we talk about first together when I was teaching middle school and when he was a tech coach. And then we used the same cycle in the creation of the book itself. And then launch was just kind of a random thing. We kept talking. We didn't have a title for the book, but we wanted, you know, we couldn't think of a name for our framework. But we kept talking about, you know, the power of a launch. That's what makes this different, is that they launch it to an audience. We kept that word launch kept coming up over and over and over again. And so it just hit me at some point where I said, wait a second, I think launch fits the framework. And so I looked and I sketched it out and came up with the acronym and said, wow, well, this actually is exactly our framework, could fit the word launch and it would be that much more memorable. And so that was kind of the behind the scenes side of it. I will say this, it was a long process. So we worked on developing the launch cycle. And again, it didn't have the title launch yet, but on the framework and revising the framework itself for about a year. And then the process of writing the book until it launched was almost a full year as well. So it was a pretty slow process.
Wow. Yeah. But I mean, you guys did it right.
Thank you.
You know, like, yeah, I don't know AJ very well. I do follow him on Twitter, but I've never really interacted with him. But knowing you and knowing the time you take to engage people, listen to them, respond to them, it's like just by flipping through your book and reading a few things here and there, I get that sense from it. And that's why I think I'm excited, because I have a connection to you. And it's an idea that sits well with me. I like that you guys used the ideas from the book to actually create the book. That's really cool. That's very creative. And so it makes for a really good story. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I know lots of people are going to be interested in hearing about that and how it came to be. You had said something earlier, now it's gone, I've lost it, I didn't write it down. I wanted to touch on it, but I'm sure it'll come back to me. This idea of creativity and being a maker, like you've said it several times, the creativity piece, it's kind of like who you are. As far back as you can remember. So this kind of leads me into the TED Talk you did that was entitled The Creative Power of Limitations. And when I first read the title, I thought, what's going on here? But then when I watched the TED Talk, I got it. And it made so much sense. I would really like to take you back to that time when you were considering this idea worth spreading and preparing yourself to speak about the creative power of limitations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So they had approached me about doing a TED Talk, and it gave me a lot of freedom on what to talk about. You know, they had suggested something about creativity, something about innovation. And I considered talking about design thinking, because it's obviously something I'm really excited about, that I'm really into. But then I thought, you know, for me, like my favorite TED Talks are the ones that kind of say something a little bit counterintuitive. And so I thought about that idea of creative constraint and like the power of limitations, that a lot of what we think makes things creative actually, it's the opposite, you know, that a lot of times the limitations become the design features for what we're making. And so I originally was going to title that, by the way, this is kind of random. I was going to call it Think Inside the Box. And the whole notion of, you know, we always talk about think outside the box, but you know, what if we repurpose the box? What if we use the box differently? What if we thought differently about the box? And so that was my original TED Talk title. And then in the last minute, I would say like the last, I don't know, about a week before it, I thought, no, I need something that sounds legit. Like if someone sees Think Inside the Box, they're going to be like, skip, I'm not going to watch this. But yeah, I mean, so it was a little bit weird, because I feel like a lot of people also with TED Talks, it's like their defining thing that they care a lot about. And creativity and limitations aren't necessarily, like, that's not my favorite side of creativity. So I didn't really choose something that fit with like the thing I'm most passionate about. So I don't know, I chose the topic wrong or something. I don't know.
I don't think so. I watched it, and it seems like it's your thing.
Oh, thanks.
It seemed to fit. But I mean, ultimately you're the speaker, you're the one with the idea. So, you know, it doesn't matter it does matter what I think, because I watched it. I didn't skip it. But that's really neat too, to hear about the evolution of that type of creative creation, your TED Talk. When you talk about the creative power of limitations. It reminds me of something that a man named John Crippo once said. Are you familiar with John Crippo?
No, I'm not.
John is he is an educator, or was an educator, an assistant superintendent, I believe, out in California. And he does a lot of work with Q, the organization Q, Computer Using Educators.
Yeah.
He now has a really fancy title with them, and I can't remember. It's something to do with innovation. Anyway, John has a lot of energy and a lot of really cool things to say about education. And I met John at the Google Teacher Academy a couple of years ago. And John and JR Jinix Orion were doing like a workshop for us about using Google Slides. And I don't remember like the title of the workshop, but long story short, I remember him giving us our challenge and saying that we had like 6 minutes. And at the end of the 6 minutes, we were going to talk about our creations. And initially, we all looked at each other like, this guy's nuts. 6 minutes? What are we going to be able to do in 6 minutes? But within that 6 minutes, and then in the debrief after, what he told us was the same kind of thing you're talking about that within limitation, there is a lot of room to be creative. There is a lot of room to explore and to bust out great ideas and great concepts. And, you know, lo and behold, a room full of educators were able to create all kinds of awesome things within that time frame. I would say a bunch of us, when we talked about it after, we talked about how, you know, we wish that we always just have time. And the bottom line is, we don't have the luxury of time. Educators are always pressed for time. There's always something being added on to your plate. I like to refer to it now as a platter. I gave up my plate a long time ago. I've got a platter and it's loaded all the time. When something comes off, something new comes on. So the title of your talk really hits close to home, because I've always been someone who hated pressure, other people putting pressure on me, but I'm now starting to change my way. I'm being open to what comes my way, and then using what I have within me to do what I can within the time frame I've been given. And I think that comes from maturity, and it comes from knowing things are going to be okay and all that stuff. But that really hit home, and I was able to make that connection to John. Hopefully, you know, you two will connect somehow over Twitter now that I've kind of both talked about you. So we'll see what happens next. I want to ask you about motivation and inspiration. What would you say generally motivates you to have all these projects on the go, to constantly be thinking about things that you'd like to do? What motivates you? What inspires you to do these things?
Are you meaning like external things, like things I read or things I watch, or?
It could be external, could be internal. Like, what gets you going?
Okay. Well, I think there's always this, I think everybody has this drive to create. Like, I think that's a universal thing that we all experience. And so what happens is, too often people ignore it. They get scared. They avoid it. They whatever. And so I think on some level there's this deeply internal drive to make something. And for me, you know, I think I like the challenge of it. I like the purpose of it. I like the meaning of it. But I also, I mean, to be honest, I like the pleasure you get from making stuff. Just the general satisfaction, the process, the journey. I mean, that's really fun for me. And then in terms of motivating creative work, I think a lot of things that I read or watch that intrigue me, make me want to do creative work. So, for example, I love certain nonfiction books. I'm rereading the book Originals right now, and I love the research, the ideas, the nonfiction, the stories. But then, you know, I at the same time, I'll read, you know, Harry Potter. I'm a huge Harry Potter nut. Or, you know, I just watched, with my kids for the second time, the movie, Zootopia. And when I see good stories out there at all, that makes me want to create good stories. That makes me want to write fiction. So, you know, there are different things that get me excited about doing creative stuff. And then I guess the last piece would be, you know, honestly, like, sometimes the creative work comes out of a desire to help or to work with a specific group, you know? So, you know, the superhero taco book is something I'm making for my kids. But, you know, I'm doing this, I'm making this, journal right now that's like a highly visual kind of sketch note slash coloring book slash journal for new teachers. And what I'm, you know, what's motivating me to do that is I want to have it finished and I want to give that to my cohort of, I have a cohort of 12, future teachers, you know, that I've been working with for a year and a half. And so, it will officially have been, you know, a full year and a half once they graduate. And so the idea of, you know, giving that to them in graduation excites me. And so sometimes it's, you know, sometimes that's where the motivation comes from.
Cool. As you were talking, you reminded me of what I wanted to ask you earlier, and it's really neat how this works, right? So you're talking, you talk about the taco superhero, you talk about the project for your students, and then boom, I remember what I wanted to ask you. What's it like to work with Dave Burgess?
Oh, that was fun. That was really cool. He's, you know, I've worked with other publishers before and they're great. You know, there's nothing wrong with the way other people work. But Dave gives you a lot of autonomy. And he really helped us refine our audience and kind of remind us of, you know, this is a K-12 audience. And so keep those K-5 teachers in mind. You know, way too many books are written for a high school audience or for a hyper literary audience. And he basically said, you know, make the kind of book you want to make that people would want to read. And so that permission to not write something that was overly scholarly or constantly citing research or, you know, that was a really fun piece of the process. And he was he's just such a cool guy to talk to and stuff. You know, he's very, dynamic, very passionate, but also just very down to earth at the same time. So it's really cool working with him.
The reason why I ask, John, is because I recently saw a video of Dave Burgess speaking with George Kouros about the iMOOC that George is doing right now with his book that I'm participating in. Mm-hmm. And I had never seen Dave speak before. I'd only ever seen Dave on social media. I didn't know that he was so full of energy. So when I was watching this guy talk, I was like, it's so weird to get to see the other side of a human when you only know them from, you know, 140 characters at a time. So it came to mind, I thought, since we're talking and since his company published your book, I thought it'd be neat to hear your take on it. So thanks for that. I want to move to the final word. And the final word of my podcast is the big question that I like to give my guests and just let them go with it, explore it, take it apart, do whatever they want with it. And again, it's about motivation and inspiration, and it's about your take on it. Having told us, you know, what you do, how you got there, your really cool ideas and your flow that causes you to create and to just be who you are. Here's the question. somebody approaches you at a conference or after you speak or something of that nature, and they basically tell you that they're not feeling motivated or inspired, what would you tell someone, based on, you know, your perspective, your experience, what would you tell someone to help them become made of motivated or inspired?
Can you say it again?
Sure. What would you tell someone to help them become motivated or inspired?
I think I would tell them to carve out time to do something creative, and I would couch that with, you know, it doesn't have to be something that helps them be a better teacher, because being creative itself makes you a better teacher. You know, it teaches you how to be empathetic. It teaches you a lot about the creative process. And so I would say, you know, find that outlet, no matter how busy you are, carve out time for it. Because it's as important, I think, as, you know, professional development and stuff like that. And so I would say, you know, go find that outlet that makes you feel alive, and then go do that.
Thank you for that, John. That's great.
Thanks.
It's my favorite part of the podcast when I give my guests what I call the final word, because, you know, we spend, you know, 35 to 45 minutes chatting, and people get a feel for where you're coming from, what you're about, how you do things. And then it's, for me, it's kind of neat. It all comes together when the guest explains what they would say to somebody who finds themselves in a position where they just don't feel it, you know, for one reason or another. So thank you for adding to that, and for, again, you know, expressing your perspective on creativity and what people might need or require to get them going. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, I would say, you know, you can connect with me on Twitter. Obviously, I'm at Spencer Ideas. And you could also send me an email. So john@spencerauthor.com. And I try to respond to emails pretty quickly. I sometimes get bogged down by life. But I try to respond pretty quickly to people.
Excellent. Well, John, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down with me and chat. And I'm very much looking forward to reading your book properly and then letting you know what I think of it. And I can't wait for people to hear, you know, all about you and kind of what gets you going and what you're working on. So thanks again for your time.
Well, thank you.